You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, How to Turn Your Independent Film into a Money-Making Business by Alex Ferrari. For a free copy of the audiobook, head over to www.filmbizbook.com.
The Director Series is made possible by the support of our subscribers on Special. Subscribe today at special.tv/The Director Series and gain access to exclusive full-length Director Series episodes and other bonus content, ad-free. Welcome to the Director Series podcast, a show dedicated to deconstructing the work of some of cinema's most celebrated and influential film directors. I'm your host, Cameron Bile.
Only a year after the release of Killer's Kiss, Kubrick found himself prepping his next big project with the support of a respectable studio, a development that Kubrick must have found was equal parts blessing and curse. While the budget was barely enough for Kubrick to successfully realize his vision, he had access to the studio's expansive resource pool and was able to inflate the production value using better cameras, lenses, and production design. However, this also meant that Kubrick now had to deal with the unions, permits, and all the other aggravating aspects of filmmaking that hamper creativity. Despite these new challenges, Kubrick's third feature proved the young auteur's innate talent to a broader audience. The Killing may not be Kubrick's most famous film, but it serves as a high-quality genre exercise told in a challenging, unconventional way. More importantly, it marks Kubrick's emergence as a mature filmmaker and unparalleled storyteller.
Earlier that morning at 5 a.m., Red Lightning was fed only a half portion of feed in preparation for the seventh race that afternoon, the $100,000 Lansdowne Stakes. At 7 that morning, Johnny Clay began what might be the last day of his life.
Tied together with an omniscient narrator speaking in the third person, The Killing incorporates multiple points of view as it weaves a fractured narrative about a career criminal and his crew executing a $2 million heist at a popular racetrack. It's the perfect crime, both in conception and execution, and Kubrick's take on the story plays like something of a procedural, detailing the actions of each team member down to the minute.
It was 9:20 when he arrived at Mike's apartment. So far, everything had gone off according to plan.
Kubrick's churning narrative builds to an explosive finale that's capped by a twist of dark irony when the criminal finds that all the meticulous planning in the world can't account for the unpredictability of chance. The Killing marks the first time in which Kubrick's cast is comprised mainly of well-known professional actors and actresses. While this is ostensibly an ensemble film, the story belongs to Sterling Hayden, who ably projects the handsome crook at the center of the story.
These men are not going to be in on the basic scheme. They're getting paid to perform certain definite duties at a certain definite time, and they're not cutting in on the take. They'll be paid a flat price to do a straight job.
Kubrick surrounds Hayden with an assortment of well-known performers like Colleen Gray, Alicia Cook Jr., Marie Windsor, and Vince Edwards. There's also an appearance by contentious character actor Timothy Carey in the first of multiple performances under Kubrick's direction as an expert marksman with an unpredictable personality. The Killing's existence as a United Artists film meant that the production was a union job, which further meant that Kubrick had to hire an external director of photography the first time in his career. His choice was Lucian Ballard, a veteran cinematographer whose work he greatly admired. Their collaboration, however, was anything but harmonious. Director and cinematographer reportedly did not get along at all, with Kubrick's pursuit of visual perfection frequently ruffling Ballard's feathers. Despite this contentious relationship, The Killing's black-and-white 35mm film visuals are a thing of beauty. The first of Kubrick's works to be shot in the widescreen format, The Killing's 1:66:1 aspect ratio allows ample room for the young director's striking, depth-filled compositions. A low-key, high-contrast noir lighting approach gives the film a high-end pedigree, matched by elegantly complex camera moves.
Randy Kennan had some personal business to attend.
In his essay The Killing, Kubrick's Clockwork, writer Hayden Guest makes a clever observation about the hidden meaning behind the film's fluid dolly work when he writes, Ballard's gliding camera cuts a neat cross-section through a series of connected rooms in its path, transforming the apartment interior into a type of controlled tunnel that exactly describes and limits the possibilities of movement. A striking illustration of entrapment that subtly parallels the camera's and actor's tracks with those of the horse race. Indeed, the interior sets of The Killing, artfully designed by Kubrick's wife Ruth Sobotka as production designer, are reminiscent of a labyrinth, an idea that Kubrick would continue to revisit throughout his career. The layout of the room seemed to suggest a finite number of paths for the characters to take, dictating their movements and actions while assimilating them into a complex cosmic machinery that ultimately renders these same characters insignificant to the grand sweep of fate. Kubrick routinely takes what would otherwise be several shots and strings them together into one fluid take, and in the process discovers a proclivity towards complicated yet understated camera work that reinforces the story's themes and that would fundamentally inform his future work.
They got their problems, and they've all got a little larceny in them.
Give me a double bourbon, please.
Don't you think you've had enough, pal?
A further innovation of The Killings is its fractured, nonlinear narrative. As assembled by editor Betty Steinberg under Kubrick's supervision, we see the same scenes several times, but each revisit brings with it a new perspective from the vantage point of another character. As the drama and tension mount, we see conflicting details and snippets of crucial information that had previously, and strategically, been withheld. To their dismay, Kubrick and Steinberg were forced to go back and re-edit the film in chronological order after test audiences couldn't follow their original edit. Thankfully for us, their conventional edit proved to be even more of a mess, and their nonlinear cut was reinstated and released to theaters. The Killing's radical story structure, while owing a significant debt to the trailblaze by Akira Kurosawa in 1950's Rashomon, proved to be highly influential itself, with its influence felt in modern films such as Quentin Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs. Kubrick's career-long exploration into the psyche of violence and sex enjoys a brief respite in The Killing, with Kubrick toning down those fascinations to focus instead on delivering a taut genre picture. Kubrick's film is most assuredly a crime thriller, but he frequently finds opportunities to color outside the lines and subvert our expectations. This undermining of genre while simultaneously upholding it would be a trademark of Kubrick's for the rest of his career, a tangible method by which he could elevate the subject matter and make salient psychological points about the human condition. Additionally, Kubrick's knack for regularly creating indelible, iconic imagery begins in earnest with The Killing, not so much in specific shots, but in visual ideas. One of the film's most compelling images is the simple sight of the hauntingly blank clown mask that Hayden wears during the heist, which one could easily see influencing Christopher Nolan's bank heist introduction of the Joker in The Dark Knight. There's also the image of a vast portion of cast sucked up by a vortex of air and billowing away into nothing, a poetic and elegant visual metaphor for the film's central conceit that chaos and chance will always be there to ruin our best laid plans. The Killing is revered as an indispensable classic today, but few remember that it was effectively dumped by United Artists when it made its original release on the second half of a double bill, the equivalent of today's January-February release window. For most filmmakers, this would be death by poor box office, but Kubrick was not most filmmakers. The film didn't make much money, but those who saw it were blown away by the director's undeniable talent, and word of mouth spread through the upper echelons of Hollywood until it reached Kirk Douglas, the man who would take Kubrick's career to the next level. Watching The Killing with the luxury of hindsight, it becomes immediately apparent that this is truly Kubrick's first mature, fully realized film. More so than any other film in his canon, The Killing makes the case for Kubrick as the link between the old-school, consummate craftsmanship of old Hollywood, a generation that influenced him immensely, and the radical innovation of new Hollywood, a generation that he would inspire directly.
Johnny, you've got to run.
What's the difference?
Thank you for listening to the Director Series. For a deeper dive into your favorite filmmakers, go to www.directorseries.net. The Director Series is made possible in large part by our generous supporters on Patreon. Please visit us at patreon.com/directorseries to see how your contribution enables the continued production of video essays and text articles on your favorite contemporary and classic film directors. Thank you.